You can subscribe to The Spectator for 12 weeks for only £12 for our print and online editions, plus get 6 months of digital access free to The Telegraph. Go to spectator.co.uk/telegraph.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shops, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Kate Andrews, our economic correspondent. It is Conservative Party conference, only rather than decamping to Manchester or Birmingham, we are in the Spectator office. James, are you taking in the vibes of virtual conference? Have you been logging on to the online chat room where you can look at virtual stalls?
Frankly, no. I think that the problem that you've got for these conferences is there is a mood of a conference. And you go around, you bump into people, you talk to people. That interaction between everyone there is what gives the conference its atmosphere. And it all seems rather bizarre just watching these videos. Now, that's not to say that there haven't been significant moments. I thought Douglas Ross's speech was very interesting. And that was, you know, I think in the conference hall, that would have been quite an explosive moment because you had the leader of the Scottish Tories essentially accusing too many English Tories of not caring about the union either through neglect or kind of worse, through being almost positively English nationalists rather than unionists. So I think there have been moments of drama, but I think you haven't got a conference in anything like the normal format. And I think you can see that in the speeches, in that I'm not sensing that this is kind of like people aren't treating these like conference speeches of old. And from what we know of the Prime Minister's speech that's coming tomorrow, it's going to be more about delivery rather than the kind of classic, I'm going to use my conference speech to set out the agenda. But as we've talked about and written about, Katie, I think the striking thing is how different the political mood now is, how on the morning after the election we would have imagined the mood at this first Tory conference. We'd have imagined you trot out onto stage, Tory MP after Tory MP who won a seat in an area that sounds like it should be Labour. Huge amounts of applause. All the talk in the bars would have been, is this a two-term mandate, all that. And it all feels so different now because COVID has changed so much.
Now, Kate, we've been hearing from the Chancellor today at virtual conference. He's given a fairly short speech. Can you just sum up what Rishi Sunak had to offer?
Well, we were able to hear most of it. Unfortunately, the app cut out about halfway through. But the crux of it, Katie, was that the Chancellor had much praise to dish out to business, much praise to dish out to people who have gone through this horrible crisis for the past 6 months. But before he got to that, he focused in on the successes of government. And those successes were pretty much laid out in terms of money spent. The self-employed support scheme, of course, the furlough scheme, now the job support scheme, the fact that government subsidize our meals through Eat Out to Help Out, the Kickstarter scheme, £2 billion, another £2 billion for the green scheme. And it seemed as if the amount of money spent was equaling the success of the government so far to manage the COVID crisis. Now, if we are to measure it that way, one could say that the government's been generous and indeed has done well. But of course, the highest number of excess deaths in Europe, here in England, one of the biggest economic contractions for any major economy, would suggest that it's not just money that's necessary. And I also found it very notable that the Chancellor put government first, that he wanted people to feel in touch with government through his speech and that they had done a lot, where usually the entrepreneurs, the businesses, the employers, they would be coming first in a Conservative speech.
James, we've heard a lot from Rishi Sunak in a way because we have had the winter economic package in the chamber. So even though this in normal times would be a really big moment for conference, is this a speech that is going to make waves, or is it pretty much the direction of travel we're already hearing from the Chancellor?
It seems a weird phrase to use in the current circumstances. I was going to say a steady as she goes speech. I mean, it was more a speech saying we're still in the crisis and we're going to carry on behaving like we're the crisis. So don't ask for the vision for the economy in 2035 because we need to see what things are like at the end of this crisis. I also think, frankly, this speech is not going to dominate the headlines today because the headlines today are going to be dominated by the latest iteration of the test and trace situation. This story about how 16,000 positive results. The important to note that people who had tested positive were informed, but somehow that information did not get from the testing system to the tracing system. And that obviously creates problems because it means that all the contacts of those people who tested positive have not been followed up and said they should self-isolate or the like. And I think this is the problem. I think it seems to be that the technical situation is that the Excel file was simply too large, which now I am the last person anyone would ask to create either a spreadsheet or a database, but various people know not more about technology than me suggest that it's really weird that they're using Excel to do something like this.
Okay, let's get on to this in more detail. As James touched on, Public Health England has said there are 15,841 cases between the 25th of September and the 2nd of October left out of the UK daily case figures. Now, that means that we're now seeing some crazy graphs, you know, a very upshot, and it's probably more of a consistent build. James obviously touches on the point that this is bad news in terms of test and trace, perhaps that's the biggest con, but it's just adding to this sense that the test and trace system is not really up to it. And it was interesting in Boris Johnson's interview on the Andrew Marr show that he spoke of his own frustrations with it. So how bad is test and trace in your opinion?
Well, it doesn't seem to be worth the money that's been put into it, which is well over £12 billion so far. And we're not even doing mass testing. We've gone back to a regime in which you have to have very specific criteria to get a test. It's very important, as James notes, that we need to look at graphs that show when people are diagnosed with COVID-19 as opposed to when these cases are reported. Then you don't get that crazy spike at the end that we saw on Sunday, Kate. But the fact that the public might have to seek out these graphs, that they might have to do so much digging in order to find out the real trajectory of cases, speaks to this issue of confidence. This should be clear. This should be relatively straightforward. What were we spending months over the summer doing if it wasn't to have a fairly basic system in which the labs and the tests could link up to the tracing elements of our COVID-19 response? And when it comes to test and trace in particular, you know, it's been subject to mass delays right through the spring and summer, U-turn after U-turn. And in terms of building up confidence for people to get back out there, to go about their daily routines, for businesses to bring back their furloughed employees to reopen, this is not good. It's a real problem for the government. It's not just 16,000 cases. It's the countless number of people who could be linked to these cases, being in contact with someone who had COVID-19, not knowing, and then countless more who just think, gosh, if I'm out there, things are not being properly tested or traced.
Now, James, this mistake comes as the government seeks to simplify the restriction guidance. So we're hearing talk that the traffic light system has been mooted in a few papers. So, you know, green, amber, red, depending on where you are and what that would mean for your daily life, could be brought in as soon as Thursday. Where do you think we're heading at the moment? Do you think that we are going to see more restrictions announced in this weekly press conference? Or do you think everything is going to be very localised at this point? Are the figures that we've just seen in terms of these missing tests, the delay, is that going to spook number 10?
I think we are looking at more local restrictions. But I think what strikes me when you look at this traffic light system is two things. First of all, perhaps unsurprisingly, but nowhere falls below the level of national restrictions, which is interesting when you consider how relatively flat the case numbers are in the southwest, the southeast, east of England. It's quite clear that everywhere is going to stay at that base case. Then the amber is essentially what the local lockdowns look like now, but red is more severe in that hospitality is closed in those places. I think what we will see is this new system come into place this week, and then I think we'll see a lot of pressure for places to be put into the red zone very soon, because there are rises in cases. There is also, I think, a view among some in government that the answer to Keir Starmer's question of why is only one place at PMQ's suite, 40 odd places have gone into local lockdown, only one place has come out, he says, or maybe it's two, is that these local lockdowns have not been tight enough. I mean, there is a view that all they are doing is containing it rather than really kind of clamping down on the virus. So I think there will be a big push for more. I think you will also find quite a few mayors pushing for more restrictions. Now, that at first seems kind of counterintuitive. You know, I think A will be a public health reason, but I think also some people would actively like hospitality in their area to be shut, because then they could feel that they could go to the government and demand specific support, while as they feel that this current world where hospitality is under greater restrictions means that those hospitality businesses are becoming less and less viable, but it's harder to get direct and specific help because it's like, well, hang on a second, they're still open.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Kate. And thank you for listening.
You You can subscribe to The Spectator for 12 weeks for only £12 for our print and online editions, plus get 6 months of digital access free to The Telegraph. Go to spectator.co.uk/telegraph.